The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of the two brothers and the 49 dragons contains depictions of mutilation and suicidal ideation. Please exercise caution for children under 13. If you or someone you love is struggling with suicidal thoughts or the impulse to self-harm, please seek help. The United States National Suicide Prevention Hotline is 1-800-273-8255. Artemisia's hands ached from kneading dough all day. Even though she was a young mother, her face was framed by worry lines. She placed the last loaf on a shelf to rise. She wiped her brow carefully, making sure not to brush any flour from her hands onto her face or even the floor. Then she packed up her things to go home. When Artemisia was halfway out the door, a voice stopped her in her tracks.
"You didn't wash your hands!"
it boomed. Artemisia cringed. She knew that voice. It echoed in her nightmares. It was her employer, her wealthy brother-in-law, Creon. Artemisia turned to face him with her head bowed.
"I was going to wash it off when I got home."
Creon scoffed.
"If you leave covered in flour, all of Athens will think my workers are unclean. Go wash up."
Artemisia started to sob.
"Please, Creon, the flour residue is for my children. It's the only sustenance I can afford."
Creon snarled.
"So, you're not only dirty, you're stealing from me too?"
He snatched a nearby basin of water and doused Artemisia. The flour ran off of her hands, forming a slurry on the ground. He shoved her roughly out of the manor.
"You're fired! And you can tell my sniveling younger brother that I hope you all starve to death."
He slammed the door. Artemisia hung her head. She knew if she and her husband didn't find a way to make money soon, Creon's words would come true. Her family would be dead. Hi, I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Spotify original from Parcast. Every Wednesday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. This week, we're delving into The Two Brothers and the 49 Dragons. This classic Greek folktale follows a poor man who swipes some gold to feed his starving family and inadvertently draws the wrath of some terrifying, dangerous beasts. Coming up, a desperate man makes a life-changing discovery. When most people think of Greek stories, they think of Homer's epics or myths about the gods. But Greece also has a rich tradition of folk tales. One of the most fascinating is the Two Brothers and the 49 Dragons. Much like Greek mythology, the exact origins of this story are difficult to trace, but we do know that its first written record appears in an Athenian literary journal called Parnassos. In 1884, it was translated into English by a British scholar named Edmund Martin Geldart, who included the tale in a collection called Folklore of Modern Greece, The Tales of the People. Geldart's translation of The Two Brothers and the 49 Dragons showed the world that Greek literature was more than just Zeus and the Iliad. The rocky Mediterranean nation also had a rich tradition of everyday people battling evil forces, magical beasts, and certain death. Cyril paced back and forth on the docks of Athens. His feet had blisters from walking up and down the marina, begging for work. Hours in the sun had bleached his hair and turned his face the color of a boiled crab. He'd been out here every day for the past 3 months, and he still couldn't find a job. But he needed to earn some money, or his family would die. As the evening sun hovered over the horizon, Cyril was about to give up for the day, until he heard a bosun's whistle in the distance. A job, he thought. Cyril sprinted across the dock to where a fishing boat had just tied up. A group of men had already formed, clamoring for work. A leathery sailor scowled at the crowd.
All right, calm down. I need 4 men for a fishing trip.
Cyril jockeyed for position, hoping to be picked, but the sailor's finger never landed on him. Cyril slumped, defeated again, and turned for home. As the 4 workers marched up the ramp onto the boat, however, one stumbled. Cyril knew the man. It was old Alexei. He'd been working the docks as long as Cyril could remember. Cyril rushed over to help him. Alexei was probably dehydrated from the harsh sun. The bosun pointed to Cyril.
If he can't work, then you take his place.
Cyril felt an electric jolt through his body. This was his chance to finally earn some money to feed his family. But as he held Alexei's weak body in his arms, he knew the old man had a family to support too. Cyril shook his head.
He'll be fine.
He pulled a canteen of water from his satchel and splashed it into Alexei's mouth.
Drink, he whispered to the man. You're missing your chance.
He yanked Alexei to his feet and pushed him up the ramp. The bosun shook his head at Cyril.
Your loss, he said.
As the orange sun set over the Aegean Sea, Cyril made his way back to his family's hut. Along the way, he thought about how close he had been to finally making some money. In his heart, he knew he had done the right thing by helping Alexei, but his stomach disagreed. It grumbled and twisted in a knot. When he arrived home, he found his 3 children playing outside. They came running over to him.
Did you bring any food, Papa?
They asked him. He patted them on their heads in disappointment.
Not today, but tomorrow will be a better day.
Inside the house, he found his wife Artemisia crying on their straw bed. He rushed over to her.
What's wrong, my love?
He asked. Artemisia choked back her tears.
Your brother fired me.
Cyril rubbed her shoulders.
Don't worry, everything's going to be fine. I came very close to getting a job today.
Artemisia blinked through her tears.
What do you mean, very close?
Cyril described what happened at the dock, how Alexei had fainted, and how he had helped the old man onto the boat. Artemisia recoiled from him.
Cyril, you know I love your righteousness, but you chose that man over your own children, over me. We're starving.
Cyril shook his head, turning his eyes towards the floor.
I'm sorry.
After a tense moment, Artemisia stood up.
It's getting dark. I'll heat up some water and lemon for the children. That's all we have for them.
As Cyril watched his wife go to work in the empty kitchen, an immense shame crashed on top of him like a wave. He had failed his family. After a moment, he slipped out the side door of the hut and started walking. Even though Cyril's feet were blistered from the docks, he trudged along the hilly Greek coastline. He didn't know where he was going, but he knew he needed to get away. His mind was spinning with various options. Maybe he could beg his brother for Artemisia's job back. Perhaps Artemisia could divorce him. She could move back in with her parents. But in Athenian society, she would be shamed even more. There had to be another option. Cyril climbed up to the edge of a bluff and squinted out at the sea, trying to think through the constant fog of hunger. Then it came to him. What if he were dead? Artemisia would be spared the embarrassment of divorce. She and the kids could move back in with her father. Perhaps she could remarry to someone with money and food. At least Cyril would die knowing they would no longer suffer. Cyril looked down at the sharp, craggy bluff falling away below him. It was so high, he could barely make out the little waves crashing against the limestone below. If he jumped here, he could end it quickly. His family would be better off. Tears started to stream down his face, but he knew what he had to do. He took a deep breath, closed his eyes, leaned forward,
At that same moment, an updraft of wind blasted from the sea below and pushed Cyril backwards. He lost his footing and tumbled down the trail he had just climbed. The whole way, rocks scraped his hands and shins. After a few moments, he thudded to a halt in a grassy meadow far below. He cursed under his breath. "I'm worthless," he thought. He even failed at killing himself. Cyril brushed himself off to head to the top of the cliff again. If anything, he knew he was persistent. But as he rubbed the dust out of his eyes, he noticed something peculiar on the coastline. A short distance away was the silhouette of a castle. Strange, Cyril thought. He had lived in Athens his whole life, but he had never heard of a palace this far along the coast. He looked down at the water below, back at the castle, scratched his chin curiously. Perhaps his first failure had been a sign that he should put his mission to throw himself into the sea on hold momentarily, just to investigate. The wind nudged him away from the edge of the bluff once again, so Cyril nodded and set off toward the castle. As he got closer, he noticed something emerge from the roof. A winged animal burst into the air, but it was much too big to be a bird. It looked to be the size of a lion, but with a long neck and scaly hide that glittered in the moonlight. Cyril's mouth gaped open in surprise. "A dragon," he whispered under his breath. He had heard legends, of course, but no one believed the creatures really existed. Then more dragons appeared. Cyril ducked behind a bush as they launched into the air. He counted 49 of the beasts. They made a circle of the valley and then disappeared over the ocean. Cyril was awestruck. He had just seen real-life dragons. He couldn't wait to tell his family. Then reality smacked him again. Stories wouldn't feed his children. He was still better off dead. If only one of those beasts had spotted him and eaten him. In the legends, dragons always killed people who got too close to their gold. Cyril stopped in his tracks. That word seemed to echo in his head. Gold. His eyes shot back to the castle. If there were dragons, there might also be treasure. That could solve all of his problems. At first, Cyril hesitated. He was no thief. In his years of poverty, he had never turned to crime. But as Artemisia had reminded him, his children were starving. And desperate times called for desperate measures. Cyril swallowed hard and struck off toward the dragon's palace. When he arrived, he snooped around the windows to see if any dragons were still inside. Confident that it was empty, Cyril clambered over a grand stone sill inside. He marveled at the building's luxurious interior. Hallways were lined with antique rugs and chandeliers. Rooms were filled with paintings and tapestries. But then he located what he was looking for, and it was even more impressive than he had imagined. In a side room, Cyril found a room full of gilded vases and sculptures, and in the center were trunks filled with gold bars, coins, and jewels. There was more wealth in this one room than existed in all of Athens. One coin alone could feed his family for a month. But as he admired the treasure, he heard a bump, and then heavy footsteps on the roof. They must be home, he thought. He scooped a few handfuls of gold and jewels into his satchel, then crept out of the palace as quietly as he could, praying to the gods he wouldn't be seen as he scrambled away along the rocky coast. Luckily for Cyril, the 49 dragons were distracted with the loot they had just plundered from shipping vessels off the coast. They were too busy to notice a man escaping. But as the dragons settled back into the castle, they noticed something was off. One dragon, with shifty eyes and an iridescent hide, sniffed the air. "It smells like human," The eldest dragon hobbled into the treasure room, his hunched back stiff and tense. He meticulously thumbed through each chest.
"We've been robbed,"
he growled. The flock panicked. What should they do? And they all turned towards the same dragon for answers. This dragon had scales the color of coal and eyes that seemed to burn like embers. His mouth twisted into a hideous, toothy grin. He knew exactly what they had to do.
"Whoever stole it will pay us with their life."
Coming up, Cyril reveals his gold to the wrong person.
The worst serial killer, the creepiest cult, the most outrageous con? If you're a true crime fan, you've probably pondered these things.
Well, now you can get answers, or at least some passionate opinions. Every week on our podcast, Crime Countdown, my co-host Ash and I rank 10 unsettling crimes centered around a common theme, debating each case with just a hint of humor to lighten the mood.
Elena and I may not be experts, and we may not always agree, but we're counting down anyway. Follow the Spotify original from Parcast, Crime Countdown. Listen free on Spotify.
Now, back to the story. Cyril fled from the dragon's palace with a satchel full of gold and didn't stop running until he burst through the door of his home, panting. Artemisia sprung up from her seat by the fire.
"What's wrong, Cyril? Are you all right? I was worried sick."
Cyril threw his arms around her. He told her she didn't have to worry about anything anymore. Something incredible had just happened. He'd tell her all about it in a second, but first he wanted to kiss his sleeping children. He had never been so happy to see their faces.
"What's gotten into you?"
Artemisia whispered to him. A grin of relief spread across his face. "We'll never go hungry again." Then he opened his satchel, spilling the gold and jewels onto the floor. Artemisia's eyes shot wide.
"Where did you get this?"
she asked. Cyril wanted to tell her all about the dragons and the palace, but he didn't want to scare her. "I found it on a cliff outside of town," he said simply. Then he added, "We'll only use it to help the family, and our neighbors too." The next day, Cyril and Artemisia bought fresh lamb and vegetables. It was the first real meal they had had in many months. Eventually, they moved out of their hut into a modest home. Cyril built a general store that connected to his new house. He stocked it with boots and fishing gear and various sundries. It provided him with enough income to keep his wife and children happy and healthy. He used some of the remaining gold to help others. On days when he was not working at his store, Cyril visited the Athenian slums. He donated food for the hungry and helped build schools. Over the next year, Cyril's benevolence brought smiles and hope to the downtrodden of Athens. Though his deeds helped many, however, they weren't enough to help everyone. The following winter was one of the harshest the city had seen. Storms ruined crops and food stores. Fishing boats were lost. With his secret supply of gold, Cyril managed to keep food on his family's table, but many in the city suffered, including the rich. One day, while Cyril and his family were eating dinner, they heard a knock on the door. Cyril was surprised to find his older brother, Creon. But it didn't seem like the same Creon that he remembered. His once proud brother was now ragged. His hair, which was usually styled in the latest Athenian fashion, was now shaggy and caked in dirt. His silk robe was in tatters. Cyril gestured for him to come inside. "Creon, are you all right?" he asked. Creon collapsed into a chair and wept.
"This winter destroyed all of my businesses. I'm left with nothing."
He looked around at the modest house.
"You seem to be doing all right. Is there a job you can give me? I'll even need your bread."
Cyril's heart sank. It pained him to see his brother like this. Before he could answer, however, Artemisia beckoned him out of the room. Artemisia looked at her husband incredulously. Are you really going to help him after what he did to us? He said he hoped we starved.
Cyril nodded in agreement. You're right. What he did was unforgivable, but he's changed. You and I agreed that we'd use the gold to help those in need. Well, Creon is in need.
Artemisia sighed reluctantly. If you think it's the right thing to do, I support you.
Cyril kissed her hand and they returned to Creon. Cyril instructed his brother to follow him next door to the storage room in back of his store. There, Cyril revealed a small chest. Cyril opened it and produced a gold coin. He handed it to his brother. Creon's eyes grew two sizes bigger.
Where did you get this gold? He asked. This would take 10 years to earn on a merchant's salary.
Cyril was conflicted about whether he should tell Creon, but surely, after Creon had experienced such hardships, he had learned something and wouldn't sell out his own brother. Cyril took a leap of faith and described what had happened to him that night on the craggy coast. He told him about the dragons and the castle and the gold.
Creon became even more excited. Surprisingly, he handed the gold coin back to Cyril.
Keep your gold, brother. If it's that easy, I'll go take some myself.
Cyril's stomach knotted itself. He didn't want his brother to go, but he knew once Creon made up his mind, there was no arguing. So he relented. He told Creon where he could find the dragon's lair. Before Creon left, Cyril grabbed him by the shoulder and looked directly into his eyes.
Make sure all the dragons are gone before you go in. I counted 49.
Creon waved him off. His old haughty pride was returning.
Don't worry, I'll be just fine.
Then he rushed out of the door as fast as he could go. Later that night, Creon followed Cyril's directions along the coast north of Athens. For a while, all he saw were hills and cliffs. He cursed his brother and thought he had tricked him. But just as Creon was about to give up hope, the silhouette of a castle came into view.
That must be it,
he muttered under his breath and hurried toward it. As Creon neared the imposing structure, he heard a great commotion. He dove behind a tree and watched as the dragons took flight. His brother had been telling the truth. Creon was so awestruck by the sight that he realized he hadn't been counting.
Was that 3 or 4 dragons? He muttered to himself. I think 4.
By the time the procession of dragons stopped, he was uncertain if he counted 48 or 49. But since no more emerged, he convinced himself that it must have been all of them. Creon left his hiding place and sprinted to the castle. He climbed through an open window, just like his brother. Then, following Cyril's directions, he quickly located the room full of treasure. He pulled a sack from his pocket and started to stuff it with coins. But when the bag was almost full, he heard a voice rumble behind him.
So, you're the thief.
A chill ran down Creon's spine. He turned around to see the most terrifying sight of his life. A beast with onyx scales and burning orange eyes. It grinned at him with rows of jagged teeth. Creon opened his mouth to explain, but the dragon didn't care. In one swift movement, it sliced through Creon's ribs with razor-sharp talons. Creon coughed up a mouthful of blood and went limp. But the beast was not through with its revenge. It planned to make an example of the thief. As it tore Creon's body into chunks, it unleashed a monstrous roar. The next morning, Cyril ran across town to check on Creon. He hoped he had been successful, but Creon's wife explained that he had not come home the night before. Cyril nearly choked. He knew what that meant. Creon had likely run into trouble at the castle. In a panic, he took off running for the castle. Perhaps his brother was still alive. Maybe the legends of dragons killing humans were untrue.
there was a chance Creon was locked in a dungeon, or so Cyril hoped. But when Cyril reached the castle, his hopes were dashed. From a distance, he noticed something strange. Four tall wooden spikes were now arranged at the entrance. Skewers on each of the pointed ends were pieces of a human corpse. As Cyril crept closer, he recoiled. He was looking at the mangled head of his brother, Creon. Cyril stared for a moment, shocked at the grisly sight, the blood-matted hair, the gashed blue skin. Then he collapsed to the ground and stifled a cry. Even though Creon had treated his family horribly, he was still blood, and Cyril felt partly responsible for his death. He should never have told him about the gold. A sudden urge swept over him to storm the castle and avenge his brother's death. But he knew that would only get him killed as well, and he didn't want to die. Not anymore. So he decided to wait patiently. He hid behind a bush until the sun set. After what felt like days, the dragons emerged for their nightly hunt. Cyril focused all of his attention on counting carefully. When all 49 monsters were gone, he tiptoed to the castle, but he did not go inside. He wasn't going to steal more gold. He only had one thing he wanted to take: his brother's body. It wasn't an easy task retrieving the limbs, but finally he wrapped up each blood-crusted appendage in his burlap sack and carried it all back to Athens. When Cyril arrived, the city was just waking up. He marched straight to a local tailor's shop. The old man who owned it welcomed him inside.
"What can I do for you?"
he asked cheerfully. But when Cyril revealed the bloody contents of his sack, the tailor wagged his finger.
"Oh, this must be a joke."
Cyril begged him.
"Please, I need your help to give my brother a proper burial."
As the tailor pushed Cyril out the door, Cyril broke down.
"I'll pay you whatever you want," he cried.
At that, the tailor's demeanor shifted. He pulled Cyril back inside the shop, locked the front door, and put a closed sign in the glass.
"How much are you willing to pay?"
he asked. When Cyril handed him a gold piece, the tailor grinned and went to work sewing the corpse back together. Miles away, back at the castle, the dragons returned from their nightly pillaging. When they realized that the thief's remains had been removed from the pikes, the black dragon roared in fury.
"Curse these humans! That pathetic criminal must have a partner!"
He turned to his brethren and snorted.
"Tomorrow we will find whoever did this. Then we will kill him and his family."
Coming up, 49 dragons seek revenge. Now back to the story. When the dragons discovered that Creon's remains had been removed, they started crafting a plan. First, they rummaged through the palace to find 48 wooden chests. Next, they dusted off a large wheeled cart they had stolen from a merchant years ago. When they had the equipment ready, the onyx dragon with the orange eyes drove the cart into the city, loaded with the 48 trunks. The dragon's first stop was the tailor. When he entered the shop, the old man's back was turned.
"What can I do for you?"
the tailor asked absent-mindedly. The dragon sweetened his voice to sound less threatening.
"Please, sir, I need your help."
When the tailor turned around, he almost fainted.
"Sorry, I can't help you,
he stammered. The dragon was prepared for that. He tossed a velvet pouch of gold on the workbench.
"I can pay you handsomely," he said.
At that, the tailor's eyes lit up, and cautiously he nodded.
"What can I do for you?"
The dragon grinned almost pleasantly.
"I need a cloak to cover my face and wings, and gloves to hide my claws."
The tailor whipped out his measuring tape, marked some numbers with a tiny nub of a pencil, and then started sewing. A short time later, he presented the dragon with the cloak and gloves. The dragon tried them on and turned around to look at himself in the mirror.
"Excellent work," he hissed.
The tailor mopped the sweat from his brow and laughed nervously.
"Believe it or not, this isn't the strangest order I've had today. Someone asked me to sew a corpse back together."
At that, the black dragon perked up.
"You don't say. And who, may I ask, commissioned that?"
Meanwhile, across town, Cyril immersed himself in his work. He was heartbroken about Creon. He started to work out a plan to support Creon's wife and children and ensure that they never went hungry. Until his thoughts were interrupted by the ringing of his shop's bell. Cyril took a deep breath and centered himself. No time for grieving. He had a customer to help. He went to the front and saw a mysterious, cloaked figure standing in his store.
"Hello there, sir,"
Cyril said.
"What can I do for you?"
The black dragon, concealed by his new garments, bowed to Cyril.
"Pardon the intrusion, but I was wondering if you might do me a favor."
He gestured out to his wagon.
"I have 48 large chests, but I have more cargo to pick up across the city. Could I leave the chests here with you? I will pay you for your help, and I'll be back later this evening to pick them up."
Cyril nodded amicably.
"Of course, friend. Swing the cart around to the storage shed and back."
Cyril and the stranger unloaded the cart into the storage room. The cloaked figure thanked Cyril for his kindness and rode off. A short time later, Cyril's youngest daughter ran into the shop, crying. Cyril tried to comfort her.
"What's wrong, Sweet Pea?" he asked.
She explained that she and her brothers were playing hide-and-seek around the storage shed, and she heard scary sounds coming from some trunks. Cyril told her that was impossible. It was probably just her imagination, but he assured her he would investigate. To Cyril's surprise, he heard the voices too. There was a deep, guttural breathing coming from all the trunks. Cyril stood staring at his shed, frowning for a moment, thinking. How had he not realized sooner? There were 48 chests plus one cloaked figure who dropped them off. It was the 49 dragons. With that realization, Cyril grasped his daughter firmly by the arms.
"Make sure your mother and brothers don't come anywhere near the store."
The young girl nodded and ran off. The hair on the back of Cyril's neck prickled. The dragons had come to kill him, and most likely his family. He needed to act fast, but carefully. First, he grabbed a crate of padlocks from his store. With all 48 chests locked, he closed the shop and ran toward the docks. There, Cyril gathered round the dozens of familiar faces, like old Alexei. He recruited all of them, promising a gold piece each for an hour's work. The men happily agreed, and he brought them back to his store. He showed them to the chests.
"I need you to dispose of these in the ocean, but no matter what you do, you cannot open them."
The men looked at each other. It seemed a little suspicious, but they needed the money, so they shrugged and got to work transporting the 48 trunks down to the water. Once they were stacked at the docks, Cyril and the men tossed the crates into the sea. As each trunk disappeared beneath the surface, Cyril could hear the dragons fighting to escape. They shrieked and banged on the trunk lids, but the locks held strong, and after a moment, the cries were muffled and soon went silent. Cyril paid the men with the rest of his stolen gold. Then he returned to his shop and waited for the last dragon to return. After the sunset, the cloaked figure returned to Cyril's shop.
"Thank you for watching my trunks,"
the dragon hissed politely. Cyril gave him a rehearsed smile.
"No bother at all," he said. "Let's go get them."
Cyril gestured for the dragon to lead the way outside to the storage shed. As the dragon walked ahead, Cyril grabbed a hammer from one of his shelves. A bead of sweat dropped off his face. He couldn't believe what he was about to do, but he had to protect his family. When the black dragon opened the door to the storage shed, he found it empty. But before he could turn around, Cyril struck him in the back of the head with the hammer. The creature let out a strained cry. Cyril hoped one blow would do it, but he didn't want to take a chance. He brought the hammer down again and again. Tears began to stream down his face. Blood began to seep and then to spray. With each hit, he told himself he was a good man. He was doing it for his family. He struck again. The dragon's flesh looked like paste. Finally, Cyril dropped the hammer and sank to his knees. He wept until his throat ached. He regretted ever having found the dragon's castle or their gold. But he realized he couldn't go back and change what happened. He had to move forward. So he hitched the dragon's body to his cart and dragged it to the docks. He rolled it into the sea with the others. When the sun rose, Cyril gathered his wife and children. "We're moving," he announced. They went to collect Creon's wife and children, and together they all made their way to the empty castle in the hills. The children marveled at its grandeur and tore off into the hallways to explore. Creon's wife wept when she saw all of the treasures in the house. She and her children would never starve again. Artemisia knew this must be where Cyril had found the gold. She looked at him with scared, furtive eyes, but he grabbed her hand. "Now we can help more people. We will really make a difference." Artemisia studied her husband's face. There was a hardness to him now, a deep pain. But when she looked closely, she could still see a glimmer of the innocence he had before. She smiled at him. Then, arm in arm, they joined the rest of their family in their new home. For thousands of years, Greek literature presented a familiar story, a world at the mercy of the gods. The deities controlled everything: earth, wind, fire, plants, and animals. But of all their playthings, the gods seemed to have one favorite above all: humans. A few select people were blessed by gods and given special treatment, but more often than not, they were manipulated, tricked, and subjected to violence. There was Prometheus, who was sentenced to a life of torture, Callisto, who was raped by Zeus, and Odysseus, held prisoner by Calypso and chased by Poseidon. So after centuries of Greek tales about deities, The Two Brothers and the 49 Dragons was groundbreaking. Even though there's a magical element, dragons, there's no mention of gods or their influence on life. Instead, the story has one main theme: free will. And it didn't skimp on examples. Artemisia is fired for taking flower residue to her family. Cyril deals with the uncertainty of not having a job. Creon is punished for stealing and being morally bankrupt. And of course, Cyril has to deal with the emotional consequences of his choice to take the gold. The Two Brothers and the 49 Dragons shows that even without gods, the world is still a violent and deadly place. Thanks for listening to Tales. We'll be back next Wednesday with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify. Join me next week for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales is a Spotify original from Parcast. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler. Sound design by Nick Johnson, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Trent Williamson, Carly Madden, and Isabella Way. This episode of Tales was written by Joseph Bricker, with writing assistance by Nora Battelle, fact-checking by Adriana Romero, and research by Mickey Taylor. I'm Vanessa Richardson.